Hello everyone, my name is Chloe and welcome to a new season of The Burning Case, a place for critical conversations about our future on this planet and how policy making, but also radical democracy, are essential to make sure that future is not only green, but also fair and inclusive. We'll be chatting about the burning issues of our time, how policies are made, and give you the tools to overhaul the system. Let's get started. Hello everyone and welcome to this new episode of The Burning Case. Obviously the context is very specific, the Ukrainian war is in full swing and we are deeply saddened by the tragic events that are currently happening in Ukraine and we stand by all Ukrainians. And it's been very difficult to struggle with the news and feeling powerless about the situation. But just a reminder that there are quite a lot of things that we can do as individuals, namely join protests that are being organized where you live. We'll share a link to websites that gathers all protests. Donate if you can. We'll also list some organizations that you can donate to. Share reliable information. Very important one. Don't forget to check your sources and talk about the situation with your friends and family. And also, let's just not forget that all the issues that we are currently facing are interlinked one way or another. So keep on acting in solidarity with your neighbor, with your friends, your community, but also refugees, you know, strangers and people across the world, wherever they're from. We'll be touching upon the conflict later on in this episode as well. But just to give you a bit of background also today on this episode, and I'm very happy about it, I'm joined by Melissa, who is part of the podcast team. Hi, Melissa. How are you? Do you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, Chloe. Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for having me. As you said, my name is Melissa, and I've been working in the EU bubble for a couple of years now, more specifically on the topic of participatory democracy, which is why today's conversation is really close to my heart, and I can't wait to get started.
And I'm very happy to have you on board this one. So as you said, today is actually the first part of a three-part series, which is about people-powered politics. Especially when you're from the EU bubble, it's sometimes very difficult to actually put people-powered and politics in the same sentence, but we'll discuss that with our guest today. And so we really wanted to discuss this because it kind of keeps popping up. And we're also a bit tired to hear that, you know, our generation is not really political, when actually we feel it's one of the most political out there. And we'll be discussing in this three step series a lot of different issues, from new movements, should youth get involved in mainstream politics or should they push from the outside, youth activism, but also citizen-led movements from across Europe. So to set the scene for this first episode, we have a really, really cool guest, and Melissa, I'll leave you to introduce him.
Thanks, Chloe. So yeah, today we are joined by Petar Marković, who is the head of mission of Montenegro to the European Union and an expert in the field of citizen-led politics. Petar, we actually met a few years back when I was working in the European Citizens Initiative, and you were heavily involved in the coordination of Voters Without Borders initiative. And yeah, we're really, really happy to have you. How are you doing?
Hi, Melissa. I'm doing quite well, thank you. And I'm very happy to see you again, albeit through this camera lens after, well, the pandemic. It's really funny how both of us working on youth participation and activism and in the EU bubble almost got to arrange a fantastic event together. And then the pandemic struck. I believe it was supposed to take place in March 2020. And then the total lockdown happened. So just this little snippet of how you and I got to meet and then not work together because of the pandemic is very illustrative of what young guys all over Europe and the world have gone through. But in spite of that, I'm feeling great. It's been a very sunny, bright day in Brussels. And although there is war waging in other parts of Europe, this gives me the motivation to work hard for peace and youth activism in Europe.
Yeah, absolutely. And indeed, we went through the pandemic. In the current situation, we've almost forgotten that also happened. So maybe we can dive straight into today's episode, and we could maybe start by setting the scene around citizens-led politics and maybe, you know, some of the challenges that are currently being faced by the youth and by citizens in general.
Thanks. So I really was struck by what Chloe said to begin with, the fact that young people out there are often labeled as not political enough or not active enough, whereas she herself included, they feel they are in fact very political. And I would tend to agree with that, and research agrees with the fact that the young people are equally political as any other generation. It's just that the ways they express their political views are different. They use different media, and they do not easily incorporate themselves in the molds of traditional politics. So they are political, but they are apathic towards party politics. They are apathic towards your parliament, your government, your usual political institutions. And that's the whole trouble of the widening intergenerational gap, that the traditional politics is not catering to young people. And if you just try to look into statistics, you will see why that is the case. Voter turnout between the population of young people 18 to 24 on average is 16 percentage point lower than voter turnout for people aged 25 to 50. This means that when a political party people are designing their programs, they want to design them for those who vote the most. And that means midlife and older generation, which means that those programs might include things like, you know, increasing the pension or increasing employment for well-educated midlife professionals. But they will not cater much to the young people because they don't tend to turn out to voting polls when those parties are getting their votes. And that's why we have this gap, which is not going to diminish until more or less 15 years from now, when the current millennials and Generation Zs, or the young people, become the majority voting population. And this is a problem, because how do we bridge this gap? How do we make young people more central to the needs of political parties? One thing that is being slowly done in Europe is, for example, to diminish the voting age from 18 to 16, which would then increase the market of voters for political parties to teenagers. And as you know, countries like Austria, but only a few in Europe, have already lowered the voting age to 16. But also, this is just a political puzzle. So how to bridge the gap between traditional politics and young people who hate it. But there is so much more to be said about challenges that are unhelpful for young people's activism in terms of work, labor market, mental health, economic disparity.
Thank you. Yeah, that's exactly what we were hoping to hear your opinion on. It's very frustrating, to be honest, as someone who feels deeply politically involved, to be called apathic by the traditional political parties or disengaged, because I feel extremely engaged and probably more than my parents' generation or my aunts or my cousins. And, you know, being called non-political, it's just it hits very close to my heart, because indeed, as you were saying, it's just different ways of expressing your activism. And so we do this, you know, via protest, we do this via mobilizing on social media, we do this via calling out our policymakers, and we feel very, I think we're very driven by what we feel is unjust. And this is what really drives our, I would say, our political activism. At the same time, and that's not just my personal experience, a lot of people that I know have been trying to get involved in traditional politics. You know, we've tried to either get in touch with our representative, we've tried to get involved in whether it's commission or national processes to involve youth. And it feels very frustrating, because it's either... It feels that we're either disrespected by public officials, we're being tokenized. That's also a very important point. You know, it's like for a lot of them, it's great. They take a picture with young people, they put it on Twitter and they say, oh, we need to listen to the youth, but then they don't actually listen to the youth. Then there's also the fact that we're seen as lacking skills or experience. And that means that sometimes we are given a seat at the table, but we're not given the voice and the respect that goes with it. So all of this to say that I'm not surprised that, you know, this generation is kind of turning away from traditional politics. At the same time, as you said, traditional politics is still where the power lies, and it's still where the changes are currently happening. So I guess all of this to come to my question, which is, for young people today, does it make more sense to still try to get involved in traditional politics because this is where the power lies and this is where hopefully we can make change in terms of policymaking? Or is it more effective to stay outside of traditional politics, keep developing new form of activism and political engagement, and push, let's say, be the sort of a driving force from the outside, shift the overturn window, push in new principles inside or outside?
Inside or outside dilemma. Tough one. I can maybe start with my own evolution or genesis. I don't know if it can be of any help or use to anyone. So I first moved to Brussels in 2014 for my PhD. In addition to this, I got a third scholarship to write up my thesis, which extended the period to 4 years. And I added Oxford to Brussels and Rome as my universities. Basically, I was being a young theorist rather than a young activist, but I was working on the European Citizens Initiative, which is this fantastic participatory tool at the EU level, which allows mostly young people to engage transnationally and inform EU policy making about topics they find important, but a tool that was somehow purposely designed to be relatively weak and ineffective because it only encourages the Commission to act but doesn't really force it to act, which is your usual problem and saga with participatory tools at the EU level. So I found all this increasingly frustrating because, as you said, even though you use these channels at the EU level and you contact your MEP and you try to meet the people in power or speak truth to power from the outside, you end up with a feeling that you are spending a lot of energy, sometimes much more energy and much more instructive work or professional work than what you perceive to be the work of a standard bureaucrat for much less money or completely voluntarily and with a dubious impact. So I ended up in the end taking up the offer to be the head of mission or ambassador of Montenegro to the EU, which is a U-turn for me. I always thought I would remain outside of traditional politics, policy, and yet I ended up in diplomacy. And what I've been doing in the past 4 months of my mandate is try to incorporate new ways of doing things, be less hierarchical, which is difficult when you're in the diplomatic service, write reports and stuff which is more engaging, bring Montenegro diplomacy to Twitter, which until now has not been easy, engage with youth also through the Conference on the Future of Europe. So for me, the solution was, in the end, try to get in and bring in the youth revolution from the inside out, because you're closer to power that way and you can actually plan a plan of action from A to Z with more likelihood for success. But I don't think there is only one solution to the problem. Some people will stay in, others will work from the outside in. Some people will engage with traditional politics, others will remain on the street and protest. As a Chinese politician once said, let there be 1,000 flowers, 1,000 ways of being young and active.
Thanks for this. And I think it's very interesting what you're saying, because I remember having a conversation with a friend about this exactly, you know, whether we're more powerful on the outside pushing for change, or whether we're more powerful on the inside. And indeed, there was this sort of answer, which was we need both. At the end of the day, we need both. We need allies within, but we also need this strong push from the outside. But at the same time, I'm kind of feeling that in order to move from the outside to the inside, there's a strong element of privilege. Whether it's social economic privilege, whether it's educational privilege. I mean, you mentioned your academic background, and the thing is, in the EU bubble most specifically, you talk at people who work at the commission, who work in the parliament, or who work in the council, and it's very intimidating because they've gone to multiple universities, they've gone to super fancy universities, they speak 3 to 4 languages, which is not a given for a lot of European youth, let's be honest. So I'm wondering how that element of privilege really influences the possibility for young people today to get involved in politics, and especially in politics from the inside, as we've been discussing, versus staying on the outside. Because it's actually, even though, of course, I'm not going to deny it, there's a strong element of privilege in the activism movement, that is for sure. But I still feel like it's a bit more open than politics. If your family is not political, if you haven't studied political science or whatever university, it can be very tricky and intimidating to get involved in mainstream politics. So how do you see that element of privilege really influencing what is possible for youth today?
Disparity between chances of different young people to really use all the rights that they have is one of the most important invisible problems for youth today. Because, you know, I think that if we are a citizen of a member state of the European Union, then basically we all have same rights. But that's absolutely not true, because the rights only are important insofar as they can effectively be used. And so I think it's very scary, especially after and during the pandemic, the kind of disparity of chances that young people have. As a little geek, let me just give you a few more statistics. For example, as the result of the pandemic, 1 in 6 young people in Europe on average that worked before the pandemic stopped working completely. These kind of people are going to find it very difficult to get back on track, because research into socioeconomic chances of young people during the pandemic has shown that the kind of trouble they're going through in just these 2 years are going to determine their chances for the next 15 years of their lives. So the consequences for their employment, the break in their studies, socio-psychological effects of feeling as the most lonely part of the population, because they suddenly lost access to their school and school friends, to social life in the years when it's very formative and important for their development, are going to diminish their total life chances for success and happiness in the next 15 years. I found this incredibly scary, and it speaks volumes about their ability to be politically active to the same effect as their older friend. One other thing is, of course, the big issue of mental health. Studies show that those under the age of 24 have the lowest rate of mental well-being and are twice as likely to have been affected by anxiety and depression during the pandemic. When we talk about privilege, we also have to talk about the privilege of those who are 25 and above, who have finished their studies and who are able to cope and bear with the problems of a succession of crises in Europe today. We're just on the cusp of getting out of the pandemic, and we are faced with war in Europe now. So this kind of, you know, crisis after crisis, they cannot be without effect on our mental health. I mean, we all are experiencing these high levels of anxiety daily. But for those digital natives out there, for the millennials who are born after 1995 and who were born into a digital age, who suddenly couldn't experience the freedom of movement which they were born into in Europe, so they were secluded, lonely, and now you're tossing their first ever experience of war on their borders. Really, really the opposite of privilege for most young Europeans out there, regardless of their socioeconomic status. So I agree with you. It's going to be very difficult to get people into traditional politics. And if these statistics have anything to teach us about the future of youth politics, is that the immediate future of is going to be antagonistic politics. So young people really protesting the usual way things are done, and many more standing on the outside than on the inside, unless we find ways to dampen these differences and the effects of the pandemic. And one of the ways the EU is trying to do that is to call 2022 the Year of Youth, and to strengthen some of the instruments that it has at its disposal to address the problems of unemployment of young people in Europe, which is the so-called youth guarantee, if you heard of it, where member states have agreed to introduce special programs, especially for the underprivileged youth, to get into apprenticeships, traineeships, and employment in the first months after they finish their education. It's a drop in the sea, but maybe in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really good to see that the youth is being paid more attention to. And we mustn't forget that at the end of the day, they are the future. And unfortunately, given the last few days, it doesn't always seem that it's going to be the brightest of futures. So it's really important that we spend time on taking care of them. And also, I'm hearing myself and I'm thinking that we're not that far off from them. So what we're saying here is definitely applicable to us as well. And I think that also over the last few days, Chloe mentioned it at the beginning, that we're feeling very powerless. So maybe we could touch upon some concrete youth led actions that you might have experienced, to really see concrete actions that we can take to change things.
Melissa, I'm going to ask a very ungentlemanly question, if I may. When were you born? Just to see if these geeky statistics have anything to bear.
I'm 1993.
Okay, so you would fit what the youth statistics say. Which, me too, by the way. We are the millennials, because I was born in 86. You were born in 93. All those born between 1981 and somewhere 1995, 1996 are the generation which on average includes attitudes like idealism, self-centeredness, detachment from common concerns, creativeness, but we are also very dependent. Some more young people younger than us, so the so-called Generation Z, on the other hand, are self-reliant and innovative and persistent. So, our younger siblings, for example, they will not feel this sense of dread that you and I share, hopefully. And they will, rather than depend on institutional solutions for our problems, they will create solutions for themselves in their little garden. So that gives me hope that, the generation in front of us is better equipped to deal with issues that the world is throwing at us. And what I enjoy the most is when I sort of hang out with people younger than me, also much younger than me, my former students, and see how they have a basically empathic and positive outlook on the world, even though it's becoming increasingly more difficult to keep to these. And that's also according to these stats, that they are an empathic generation. Before turning to concrete initiatives, maybe that's also our hope for the young people on the outskirts or the periphery of Europe that are in these days dreaming we are European. I'm speaking, of course, about the application of Ukraine to join the EU, which was submitted 2 days ago, followed by other countries in the Eastern neighborhood like Georgia and Moldova, which have or will also apply for EU membership. This is a bit revolutionary in itself. Why? Because the European Union has opened the perspective of membership for Western Balkan states, but has so far been reluctant to clearly and explicitly give the perspective of EU membership to Eastern neighborhood countries. What we see now is that especially young people in Ukraine, but also Georgia and Moldova, are claiming this right for themselves, irrespective of what Brussels and other capitals are saying, and they're applying for membership. And this is important because Europeans are not just the citizens of the EU, but also the future citizens of the EU. These future EU citizens include the future generations of Europeans, and so temporally future EU citizens, but also geographically future EU citizens, those which are on track to becoming EU members. This countries like Montenegro, Serbia, North Macedonia, Albania, Bosnia and Herzegovina, Kosovo, but now, as of today, also Ukraine, Moldova, and Georgia. Concrete initiatives which give me hope. One concrete initiative which I hope will excite young people to really join is the initiative you mentioned earlier that I helped launch and that has since had a very exciting life of its own. It's the initiative to give voting rights to EU citizens living in a different member state, so mobile EU citizens, which currently don't have the voting rights in national elections. When you move from one EU member state to another, you're of course entitled to vote for local elections and for European elections, but as a foreign resident in that country, you cannot vote for the elections that really count. You can vote for this European Citizens Initiative by just simply finding it online. It's called Voters Without Borders, and it's still collecting signatures, and it needs more than 1 million signatures at the EU level in order for it to force the Commission to act.
But kind of going back to what we were discussing before about where the power lies and where can we make the most effective change, clearly there's a disinterest, we've been talking about this, from young people to, let's say, traditional party politics. At the same time, we still need to get young people in power while we build a different system that would allow us to take decisions in a different ways. But meanwhile, while the system is being built, is being developed, we still need to be able to influence the current system. So essentially what's needed from current political parties and institutions to attract youth, do you think? And when I say youth, I want to kind of take up on what we were discussing before. Youth from all backgrounds, diverse, and, you know, not just the privileged youth that went to certain universities and speak four languages. How do they manage to attract this? Is it the topic that they're addressing that needs to change? Is it the way decision-making is taken? You were mentioning hierarchical. Yeah, versus, anyway, you get what I'm trying to say, versus horizontal. Is this what needs to change? Because at the same time, I find something that is extremely worrying. It's the statistics of more and more young people going to the extreme political parties, and including the far right. The far right is actually full. We would think it's full of old white people, you know, that are desperate about an old past that is no longer. It's actually, there's a lot of young people in them. So what do we do? What do political parties and institutions need to change? And do you think it's a lost cause? And essentially we need to set up our own political party. We need to set up our own system of working because they're just not able to cater to the youth needs.
Yeah, no, I agree with you completely. And basically, one of the former jobs I had was at the European Citizen Action Service, a really, really good European umbrella organization dealing with rights of mobile EU citizens and EU citizens in general. And I was very happy to see that they just hired like a diversity and inclusion officer, which is basically going to go through everything they do and double check if it's inclusive and diverse enough. I think that every organization, every political party, every EU institution needs to have a young person aged 16 to 24 doing their internship, but also being there and going through everything that comes out of this these institutions. And if it's not understandable to them, if they lose interest after 10 seconds of skimming through it, then it's no good. It needs to be scrapped and thrown out. I'm sometimes amazed by what comes out of European institutions. They spend tons of money outsourcing the production of some material supposedly which should be attractive for young people. We have an inflation of manifestos, of youth documents, youth strategies, youth action plans. And when you open them, you are faced with like a document with tons of text and paragraphs and footnotes, or slightly better version, endless bullet points and an obligatory photo of a happy, smiley young person with a blue sky and the new flag. This doesn't work for my generation. It's most definitely not going to work for the Generation Z out there. So basically, long story short, youth officer in every organization translating those big-minded ideas of the older folks into Generation Z language.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. But I'm just thinking personally, we are seeing, you know, a lot of change coming from the youth, and it's fantastic. But do you think that with time, these new movements will actually just mold into what we've seen before, or is there a drastic change that's actually happening? And yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Sure. The fact of life is that the young generations now are going to become older generations of tomorrow. So when you have that dilemma, is it a change within a system or the change of the system? I think that it's still a change within the system. But I feel that for young Europeans out there, what's really going to matter is how the EU expands in the future. Because already now we have an EU 27 and we have President Macron who says that the EU will not enlarge before it reforms within, because it's already becoming too difficult to have a complex decision-making animal. 27 different combinations of votes. And this is both true, but also discouraging for future EU citizens from the Western Balkans and Eastern Europe. Because what you're telling them is basically you're going to remain outside of the club until we find a way to make this work. But on the other hand, if we are too hasty and just hastily enlarge the EU to include Western Balkans and Eastern Europe without finding a way to function within the existing club, we are going to do what's the hope of those Eurosceptics out there for decades now, more especially the formula advanced by the British before Brexit, which is if we just enlarge and not deepen the EU, it's not going to function well as a federal construction. So then Jan is going to turn into a talking club. On the other hand, we need to deepen the EU and give more power to Brussels, not because we particularly like Brussels, but because the young generations are going to be faced with a lot of problems that cross national boundaries, from climate change to organized crime to you name it. And that's why the solutions to those problems have to be a joint solutions of young people across borders. And so let's be careful not to enlarge too much without giving young people an institutional voice. Let's try to do both of that together and create a more equitable system for all generations.
Thank you so much. Thank you for coming in and explaining your perspective, which I think is really interesting. You know, going from civil society into quote unquote, you can't see me, but quote unquote, the system, and still, you know, pushing for change from the inside. I think it's a really interesting perspective and probably very inspiring for anyone who's listening and who's thinking of taking the same path and hopefully pushing for change from the inside. So wanted to thank you for this. Wanted to thank Melissa for being a great co-host today. It was really nice to have you on board as well. And we're all obviously very heartbroken, and we'll be linking several ways to mobilize and get active if you are from Western Europe and more specifically from Belgium to help with the situation in Ukraine. So if you're interested, check out the post below the episode. That's it. We hope you enjoyed this episode. We definitely did enjoy making it. And I said in the beginning, it's actually the first part of a 3-part series about youth engagement in politics. And next we'll be talking about the different tactics between organizing, campaigning, and the last one will actually be about youth engagement in politics. So definitely stay tuned for this. And as usual, if you enjoyed this episode, and even if you didn't, please tell us, you know, reach out on social media at The Burning Case Podcast, send us a DM, let us know what you like, what you didn't like, what you'd like to see in the future. That definitely means the world to us. So thank you again, and have a lovely rest of the day.